From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Character is destiny, says Senator John McCain, and it's the title of his brand new book. To hear the senator from Arizona tell it, young Americans ought to spend a little less time contemplating Justin Timberlake, 50 Cent, and Paris Hilton, and a lot more on Joan of Arc, Nelson Mandela, Charles Darwin, and Pat Tillman, the football player who went to war and died in Afghanistan. John McCain is using figures from history, some very recent, to give lessons in honesty, integrity, and excellence. We hope he'll share the book around Capitol Hill and maybe the White House. A new poll says only 40% of Americans now see President Bush as honest and trustworthy. His allies are under investigation. A top White House aide is indicted. And here's John McCain with inspiring tales of lives well lived. This hour on Point, Senator John McCain on character and the state of the nation. You can join the conversation. Who's got character in Washington these days? Who doesn't? Are you with John McCain or against him on torture, on deficits, on the war in Iraq? Were you with the senator when he ran against George Bush in 2000? Were you with him when he backed George W. Bush in 2004? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York City is Senator John McCain. His new book is Character is Destiny, Inspiring Stories Every Young Person Should Know and Every Adult Should Remember. John McCain, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Tom. And could I editorialize just for a second?
By all means. That's why you're here.
Remarks, you mentioned that I had written a book prior to the 2000 election, and now right now, Mark Salter and I have written two in between. And this was written at the request of our publisher. I would not like it to have any relation to ambitions of my own, because I think the message is timely in the scenarios you described it, including a very low approval rating of Congress. We have a tendency naturally to focus on the approval ratings of the president. The approval ratings of Congress are at an all-time low, and the trust of Congress, both parties, is extremely low as well. We haven't seen numbers like this in the last 10 years. And anyway, thanks for having me on, and thanks about when we wrote the book, it took us a year.
Yeah.
Things were not quite like they are now, but I think right now maybe some of the examples of the leaders and individuals in the past who have shown great character traits might be more applicable today than we thought it might be when we first started writing the book.
They just might be, and we're good to have you. Your protestations acknowledged there, though, you know, the White House always sits there, and we know it does have a certain allure. And yes, between Faith of My Fathers and now, we saw Why Courage Matters and Worth Fighting For, your memoir, of course. We have so much to talk about, but if we don't go straight to the book, I'm afraid we'll just blow past it, and I don't want to do that because it's interesting. You've got a couple of dozen figures from history here, some extremely recent, as in Pat Tillman. But you go through character traits, honesty, respect, righteousness, diligence, humor, courtesy, aspiration. Thomas More for honesty, Mahatma Gandhi for respect, Winston Churchill for diligence, Romeo Dallaire, interestingly, the Canadian officer and UN rep in Rwanda when things went bad there, Nelson Mandela for forgiveness, Dwight Eisenhower for humility, Charles Darwin for curiosity, and right on down the line. When you set into this, we'll put aside the scandals in Washington for a moment, but when you set out to do this, Senator McCain, what were you aiming to do here?
Primarily aiming to inspire all Americans, but particularly young people, that great lives offer great lessons, and the choices that we make about what kind of character we have will determine our destiny and whether our lives are truly satisfying and happy. We started out writing this book, Tom, sort of in a tutorial or professorial way, and after we'd done a lot of work, we decided that was foolish because young people, the last thing they want to be is talked down to. The second point, I think, of the book is that what we're trying to do is tell stories of people's lives. It's one thing to sit my kids down and start lecturing to them about how they should lead good lives. It's something else to point out about a guy like Theodore Roosevelt, you know, who was in the arena and had his crowded hour and his enthusiasm for everything in life. You know, that might get their interest to hear about them, to hear about Wilma Rudolph, one of 22 children who could not walk when she was a child, who went through incredible trials and ended up to be an Olympic champion. You know, those kind of, and of course, Pat Tillman that you keep mentioning is the most recent, but a lot of people don't know about Magellan and the incredible feat that, you know, that one of the greatest feats in history.
As in Ferdinand Magellan, and you put him down as the exemplar of aspiration. Well, it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah. So basically, that's what it's all about. And we try to make the stories interesting. We try to offer a little insight into their lives. Tolerance. Here's four chaplains in World War II, one rabbi, one Catholic, two Protestant, who went through training together and became very close and dear friends. They're on a ship during World War II going to Iceland and or Greenland, excuse me, mm-hmm. and they're torpedoed by a German submarine in freezing waters, and they're standing there on the hull, gave their life vests to others who didn't have theirs when last seen, with the hands clasped together in prayer and singing hymns. I mean, you know, that kind of thing is just remarkable.
And maybe not enough lauded, maybe not enough paid attention to in our contemporary culture, maybe lost in the fizz of everything going on electronically.
I'm afraid so. I'm a big sports fan, and I noticed that this T.O. and Owens situation with the Philadelphia Eagles, and whether he was right or not, and whether, you know, and yet there's so many wonderful Americans who are doing so many wonderful things that as much as I am interested in the game of football, you know, enough already.
Let me ask you about Pat Tillman. You have him down as the personification of citizenship. And, of course, this was the Arizona guy from college who went off and played pro football and then walked away from his big contract to join the Army Rangers, elite Army unit, ended up dead under mysterious, shall we say, or even deceitfully described circumstances in Afghanistan, ultimately it turns out by friendly fire. First of all, what's the lesson you see in Pat Tillman, John McCain?
Well, the lesson is that here's a young man who believed that service to his country was something that he had an obligation to do. And by the way, during the period he was serving in the military, he never had a press conference. He never spoke to a reporter because he didn't feel he was anything different than others. And, of course, it's tinged, Tom, with an unhappy kind of a situation because he was killed by friendly fire, and the initial reports were not only not friendly fire but attributed some acts to him which actually didn't take place. Thanks to his mother's dogged inquiries, I mean, unflagging efforts to find out the truth, we finally found out the truth. And that, unfortunately, has had a very embittering effect on his family. And I understand that. But I also believe that someday we will all appreciate that Pat Tillman was a hero no matter how he died. He was serving his country in the most magnificent fashion.
You know, the thing is, Senator McCain, I don't think most Americans miss the basic lesson there. He had everything going for him, and he went off to serve at war. And whatever happened, I think people see that. But it is astonishing that the U.S. military, which with which you are closely associated through your own Vietnam service, would come up with this, what turned out to be kind of poppycock story of final heroism and guns blazing that seems to have been deliberate, a deliberate deception even of his family as he was buried. What does that say about the character of ranking U.S. military officers today?
Well, first of all, the reports came out of the field that those first stories, so it wasn't came out of ranking people.
Well, read that it wended its way through pretty high levels before it came to the public.
That's true, Tom. But there is also, there is the fog of war. There is a lack of definition of what happens over time. If I have a problem, it's not so much with the initial stories. It was the failure to truly and thoroughly investigate in the intervening months. And the only reason, I think, why the truth actually – the truth would have come out over time anyway, but when it did was because of Mary Tillman, Pat's mother, who continued to contact me and others and say, I want answers to these questions. And you know, it's so – makes me sad because we get diverted off onto that aspect of Pat's life rather than the true meaning of it.
You say that it's character ultimately that determines happiness or unhappiness and really success for a person or a nation. You say you don't believe in destiny. What about character itself, John McCain? Is it immutable? Are we born with it? Do we shape our own?
I think we shape our own. I am absolutely convinced we shape our own, whether it's Wilma Rudolph, one of 22 children, or Winston Churchill, who I think most of us know was cruelly treated by his parents. Not only did his mother never pay any attention to him, but his father intentionally denigrated him and insulted him and belittled him. And yet that inspired him to to adopt the strongest kinds of character traits. So I think one of the lessons that we try to draw from this, hope people draw from this, that it's not immutable. We all have choices, and it's easier when you have loving and caring parents and a great upbringing, but it certainly isn't the determining factor in what kind of character we assume as we grow into later life.
And we're going to look at character as it's playing out in Washington right now and across the country. Senator John McCain is with us. His new book is Character is Destiny, Inspiring Stories Every Young Person Should Know and Every Adult Should Remember. He's looking at Theodore Roosevelt as an exemplar of enthusiasm, Charles Darwin as a personification of curiosity, Dwight Eisenhower, humility. What do you see in Washington today? What's your question for the senator whose presidential campaign bus was called the Straight Talk Express? What's your question for John McCain? Are you with John McCain or Dick Cheney on the torture issue and why? And how do you see the character issue playing out in Washington today? Who's got it? Who doesn't? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We'll be right back with Senator John McCain. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Arizona Senator John McCain about character and the State of the Union. His new book is Character is Destiny. You can join our conversation. Were you with John McCain when he ran for president in 2000? Were you with him when he stood up strong for George W. Bush in 2004? Independents, where do you stand on John McCain now? Republicans, Democrats, where do you stand? What's the lesson you take from the story of Pat Tillman? And maybe this, do you really know where John McCain stands on the war in Iraq? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Senator McCain, I'm looking here at a wire story just off the transom. President Bush in Panama City, Panama, today, this morning, saying defending U.S. interrogation of suspected terrorists after the public disclosure of secret CIA prisoner camps in Eastern Europe, and the president saying we do not torture. Is that a fair and honest statement, Senator McCain?
I certainly take the president at his word, and then it seems that then there should be no resistance whatsoever to the amendment that that we have passed through the Senate, a vote of 90-9 that says we will not practice cruel, inhumane, degrading treatment or torture, and we will. The other part of it is a little bit complicated, but it's important to point out that the Army Field Manual, which is the manual that the Army uses for all of their the things they do in conducting combat operations, that there's a classified or secret appendix to it that lays out exactly what interrogation techniques can or cannot be used. And by the way, you hear someone, well, as soon as the enemy knows about it, well, he won't know about it. It's it's a secret a part of it. Well, so I hope that the president will indeed agree to pass this legislation so that there's no doubt that our message to the world is that we don't practice cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment, and we will not torture anyone.
We'll look at that in more detail, but on this issue, you say you take the president at his word when he says we do not torture. You said yesterday that the United States was wrong to torture, your word, Al-Qaeda 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. It sounds as though you're saying the United States has used torture. Is there a parsing of words here? We did then and we don't now. Is that how you take the president at his word? Or is he misrepresenting what's going on?
All I know is that I saw the pictures of Abu Ghraib. I mean, that's ample evidence that we did practice cruel, inhumane, degrading treatment and even torture. There are reports of torture that have come out, and there are reports of secret prisons. I only know what I read in the newspapers and what I've informed of by the media. I hope we are not doing it. If we are not doing it, passing this passing this into law, signing this into law, will remove any doubt that anyone has. Have no doubt, Tom, about the damage to America's image in the world that these allegations have caused. That's what I'm more worried about than anything else, is America's image in the world.
But beneath all that, you're clearly worried about character. Honesty is one of your categories. When the president says, we do not torture, is that honest?
If the president is saying at this moment, and I'm not trying to parse words and what is, then yes, and quote, practice means something. There are some who will say that Abu Ghraib was a breakdown in discipline and a situation which has not been repeated. I hope that's the case. I don't have the secret information, so I take the president at his word. But we can resolve any ambiguities, any questions that may arise, if we state, and by the way, according to the Constitution, it is an obligation of Congress to take care of captives on land and sea, captures on land and sea is the phrase, and make sure that it never happens again.
Senator McCain, we read in the Washington Post today that Vice President Dick Cheney is really putting the arm on people in Congress to oppose the amendment that you have in there against this. I believe you met with him yourself personally. What's the argument the vice president makes for, I guess, for torture?
The same argument that has been made publicly, is saying that there's a need for certain circumstances. I don't think he ever says there's a need for torture, but I think he says that there is a need, and I'm talking about his public statements, which are no different from private. His public statements that we need to have the option, if necessary, to use certain forms of interrogation. And by the way, General Colin Powell, who has great experience in military in these matters, totally agrees and supports, wrote a letter in support of our amendment. General Shally Kashvili, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The list goes on and on and on of former military and active duty military people and former intelligence people and active intelligence people who all say that this is the right thing to do.
We're talking with Senator John McCain about character and the state of the nation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Senator McCain, a lot of people want to talk to you. I'd like to turn to them.
Sure.
Haywood is calling from Lebanon, Tennessee. Hello, Haywood.
Hi, how are you all today?
Very well, thanks.
Haywood, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. Glad to meet you and glad to talk to you. I'm a former combat helicopter pilot. Flew two tours in Vietnam, one under guns and one as a medevac. And there is no way in the world. I supported the president 300% campaign, but there's no way in the world that we as a people and we as an army can stand up to our captors, if we are captured, and say, by the Geneva Convention, you can't do this to us if we do this to the people that we capture.
So you're against the use of torture, Haywood?
5,000%.
And what do you think about Vice President Cheney sticking up for it?
And he's never been in combat, and he doesn't know that fear. I used to go into LZs to pick up people that were shot down, and the main drive to me was that they would not be captured.
John McCain, you, of course, were captured and experienced torture. How's that affected your view of this issue?
I hope that it's had some, given me the benefit of experience, just like it has with Haywood, but it hasn't been the driving factor. The driving factor is my perception of what America should and shouldn't be doing. And I especially want to thank you, Haywood, because you've had the experience and background. And let me also add that if what Haywood's point is very important here. If you allow this kind of exception or where CIA can do certain things that military can't do, the next time we're in a war, an American is captured, the military that captures him turns him over to the secret police.
And the torture and that begins.
As Haywood said, I'm deeply concerned about Americans who may become captives in future conflicts, and this is a great first call for me. Thanks.
Haywood, thanks very much for your call. Let's take another. Mark is calling from Silver Spring, Maryland. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you, Tom, for taking my call.
Certainly.
Senator, it's a great pleasure to even be able to ask you a question over the phone.
Thank you.
I worked with the Soviet Union in Russia for a long time, and I find that the problem of prisoner detention and possible torture, I received a lot of skepticism about the truthfulness of American ideals and the things that we're proposing be adopted in countries like that. And I'm upset that when the debate now comes up here about detention and torture of these prisoners, it always seems to come down to we shouldn't be letting guilty people go. We shouldn't be letting these dangerous people go, when what really is at stake here, and I'd like the senator to comment on this, is that there are innocent people that are being held and detained without due process of any sort.
Mark, are you talking about these reported black prisons in Eastern Europe now, Poland, Romania?
Which is only the latest report on even the general prison, the prisoner detentions from starting in Afghanistan. The people being held for 2 years with no resources, no legal resources.
Do you trust that John McCain would do things differently, Mark?
I believe that John. I'm a Democrat, and I would like to see, very much like to see, John McCain run for president, have his party's be his party's candidate. Yes, I think he would, because I think he has a different perspective, having been a prisoner of war. I think he understands that it's probably the best way to make permanent enemies of America.
Mark, thank you very much for your call, Senator McCain. What about the reports of black prisons, of unreported CIA prisons in Eastern Europe? Do you know anything specific about those?
No, I do not, and I was never briefed or never had any knowledge of it till I saw it on the front page of the Washington Post. I'd just like to say Mark's point is very valid. How do you know if someone is innocent or guilty, and therefore you would do those kinds of things? And I have one important point I forgot to bring up earlier that Mark reminded me of. The Israeli Supreme Court ruled in 1999 that they could not practice torture or cruel, inhumane treatment. They don't. I have talked to high Israeli defense officials. They don't do it. They use psychological methods in order to get information they need. Now, if the Israelis don't have to torture people who are subject, literally in some case at times, to suicide bombers on a daily basis, why does the United States have to do it?
Mark Bowden writes in the Wall Street Journal this morning that war is far from an ideal situation. There's the ticking bomb scenario where there's a particular piece of information you've got to have, and maybe twisting that arm just a little tighter would get it for you. You say still no?
Oh, yeah. I still say no, because you're not sure about that. But Mark goes on to say in that article that we should ban it, and that there may be some times in the heat of battle that someone doesn't strictly adhere to it. I wouldn't like that. I wouldn't want it. I wouldn't approve it. But as he points out in that article, sometimes in the intense heat of battle, something bordering on that would happen.
But make it be against the rules, you're saying.
Let me finish, Tom. Mm-hmm. That's far different from setting up a series of prisons throughout Eastern Europe. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And you're saying at least make it be against the rules, even if it happens sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And make sure that everyone is briefed that you don't do these kinds of things. One of the worst things that ever happened in the whole Vietnam War, as you know, was the My Lai Massacre. Mm. That killed. It took years for our army to overcome the stain of that kind of behavior. Well, people come out and having been tortured, particularly if they're innocent, but under any circumstances, we're losing the battle of ideas at least in the Muslim world, and we've got to regain our footing.
Mark's a Democrat in Maryland there, and he says he'd like to see you run for president. Are you going to do it, John McCain?
I'll decide after the 2006 elections. I really am not contemplating it at this time. So I will go through a process after the 2006 elections.
And what are the big pieces of your thinking? What are the big pieces? How will you think about it? What's your calculus?
My qualifications, my ability to address the issues that confront the United States of America in the 21st century, and whether I am convinced that I can win a race based on principles and addressing the issues in the way that I think they need to be addressed.
Can you win a nomination in the Republican primary? You have Charles Darwin among the character exemplars here. You laud Thomas More, who you cite for honesty, for being a humanist. And I've heard, you know, evangelical Christians just speak with disdain of humanism. Can you win, given what's happened with the religious tenor of the Republican Party, the backing?
Most polls today are just name ID, but almost all polls show me and Rudy Giuliani at the top. I have broad support in the conservative part of our party and the independent and moderate, so-called moderate parts of our party. I do fine throughout, if you believe the polling data. That would not be of a great concern to me. By the way, in the case of Charles Darwin, I understand and have read carefully. He believed in natural selection. He believed in evolution and those kinds of things. But he also believed in the magnificence of the world. And I believe that in the time before time, it was the hand of God that caused the creation of the world. I don't believe that the world was created in 7 days. I just don't believe that. But I do believe it was the hand of God that that brought this earth into being and human beings and all of the magnificence of this world. And it is not necessarily in contravention to the theories of creation.
And you support the teaching of intelligent design in American schools. Is this an election-ready position?
I support the airing of all viewpoints in America, including Marxism, including socialism, including libertarianism, including I think Americans should be exposed to all ideas and viewpoints.
Well, you know, we've talked with all the biggest
excluded.
We've talked with almost all the biggest excluded. We understand. We've had almost all the biggest evolutionary biologists on this show at one time or another. Mm-hmm. E.O. Wilson will join us soon. Mm-hmm. They all agree that we're talking here about evolution. How do you put intelligent design in there, making a kind of equation between that and evolutionary science, and not undercut science itself, John McCain?
Because I believe that it was a time before time when the hand of God played a key role in in the creation of this world, and I'm entitled to that belief. You may not hold it. That's my belief that God did create this incredible. Universe in which we reside, and every day I see manifestations as Darwin did of his work.
Why not teach that in a religion class then? Why in the science part of the textbook?
Why teach Marxism and why teach socialism?
No, but they may be welcome, but they're in political science. You wouldn't teach Marxism.
No, they're not in political science. They're taught on their own. And I firmly believe that all points of view in America, the greatness of America is that all points of view should be young Americans should be exposed to. And to say that there are people who believe that it was created by God and that they don't agree with the theory of evolution is what's wrong with the clash of ideas in America?
Some would say that it undercuts American kids' basic understanding of science and predisposes them.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be taught evolution. I'm not saying they shouldn't be taught other scientific theories. I'm also saying that they should not be excluded from the viewpoint, which I happen to hold, that God created this world, and that is not in contradiction of evolution, because I think God started it all.
In 2000, Senator McCain, you gave a pretty tough speech on the impact of evangelical Christians on the Republican Party. You paid a price for that. Have you made peace with James Dobson and the rest of that world?
I don't have any problems with them that I know of. I have continued to believe that the Republican Party, is a broad party. It's the party of Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan, and so many people complain about the influence of the so-called Christian right in our party. My response to that is, if you don't like it and you're not part of the Christian right, then get involved in our party and counterbalance them. Otherwise, you're free to criticize. That's fine in America, but you won't have any effect.
We've got to take a short break. We're talking with Senator John McCain. We're so glad to have you here, Senator. His new book is Character is Destiny. You can join our conversation. What's your question for John McCain? Are you ready for another John McCain run for the White House? And how do you see the American national character evolving today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, BICON.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Arizona Senator John McCain. His new book is Character is Destiny. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Robert is calling from Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Robert. You're on the air with John McCain.
Hi. Last night, in a character played by Alan Alda on The West Wing, we had a credible portrayal of an honest yet conservative Republican. Mm-hmm. And in 2000, we saw the real McCoy in you, Senator. Today we see the likes of Louis Libby and Tom DeLay and Karl Rove and Bill Fritz and the former governor of Connecticut and Illinois and Condi Rice and Dick Cheney and, of course, the abomination-in-chief in the Oval Office itself. Your party is steadily being corrupted by crooks and liars, the likes we haven't seen since Haldeman and Ehrlichman and Mitchell. You hosted Saturday Night Live once before, and they portrayed you in a Robert Schmeigel cartoon, suffering the consequences of schizophrenia because you brought yourself to George Bush's defense on the campaign trail.
Put the question, Robert. We've got the...
My question is this. How could you? How could you stand up for this disgusting fraud? You're better than that.
John McCain, how about that?
Thank you, Robert. I believe that, and still believe that, the transcendent issue in the 2004 campaign was who is best equipped to lead in the war on terror, to lead this nation. And I believe then, and I believe today, that George Bush was the most qualified candidate to do so. I feel that the war on terror is going to be with us for a long period of time, and I believe that I did the correct thing, and I have very little doubt. Tom, could I just mention one thing to
Please.
You? Because this is a very important issue, as you know. I'd like took to the break, I'd like to just read you the one sentence that Darwin wrote at the end of Origin of the Species.
Okay.
And I quote,
yep.
"There is grandeur in this view of life, with its several powers having been originally breathed into a few forms or into one, and that whilst this planet is gone, cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved." That's basically my view. I don't see any contradiction between a view that it was God that started all this and evolution as Darwin. And I know he was an atheist, but I believe that it was a hand of God in it, and to exclude that view, in my view, is not giving young people the entire view that people have of how we came to be.
John McCain,
see,
I think
my point?
I do, and I think we've got you pretty clearly on the record on that.
Okay,
but I don't want to go back to the dawn of time and miss Robert's bill of complaints here, because they're pretty long and strong.
Sure.
And I guess the first thing is, you say you believed in 2004. We all saw you stand up at the Republican convention, mm-hmm. come out very strong mm-hmm. for George Bush, that he was the best one to lead the fight in the war on terror. Do you believe mm-hmm. now, this many months later, that events have borne out your view? Given the state of the war in Iraq,
I still believe that. Yes, I do. And I noticed that my friend, and he is my friend, John Kerry, just called for a withdrawal of troops from Iraq. I don't believe we can do that until the situation is stabilized to the point where we can. So my view of the war in Iraq has been authenticated because I strongly disagree with John Kerry's statement of the last week, a week or so ago, that we have to withdraw 15,000 troops.
But what about the execution of the war in Iraq? What about the execution of Katrina relief? What about the issues of honesty that Robert raised that we've seen, you know, Patrick Fitzgerald's investigation the last few weeks in Washington?
Well, first of all, I have been very critical of Secretary Rumsfeld's handling of the war in Iraq. I still also believe that Saddam Hussein had and used weapons of mass destruction. The sanctions were eroding. We know now how corrupt the oil for food program was, and sooner or later Saddam Hussein would have attempted to acquire and use weapons of mass destruction. As far as the Katrina thing is concerned, the American people have expressed their displeasure with the handling of Katrina, and the president has suffered in the polls accordingly. But I also believe that a strong effort is being made to help down there by the Congress and the American people and with the president leading. Has he done everything right? Of course not. Have I done everything right? Yeah. Of course not.
But if you're strongly critical of Don Rumsfeld's execution of the war,
yes.
This is President Bush's Secretary of Defense. Isn't that George W. Bush's responsibility then?
I'm sure that it is, and I have never done anything that wouldn't express my strong disagreement with some of the conduct of the war, which has cost us, you know, American blood and treasure. I still believe we have to see it through. I still believe chaos would ensue if we left. I still believe that a flawed but functioning democracy in Iraq will have a tremendously beneficial effect throughout the Middle East, and I mourn as much as you or any other American does at the loss of young American lives.
Mark is calling from Bettendorf, Iowa. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you both. Love your show and appreciate both of your work.
Thanks, Mark.
I was a registered independent all my life until the last few years, socially liberal, fiscally mm-hmm. conservative, mm-hmm. and I generally agree with a lot of what you have to say, Senator McCain. It seemed to me like in 2004, when Kerry at one point had actually extended kind of an olive branch and offered a really unusual proposal as having you as a vice presidential candidate on his presidential ticket, it seemed to me that that was a really unique opportunity at a horrible time in our country to really unify people, because I think you have that crossover appeal. Do you,
you wish John McCain would have done it, Mark.
Yeah, I guess asking the question in this way is probably silly because you have to answer the right way, but I wonder if you ever have any regrets about that or about your fervent support of Bush in light of what he had done to you and what he's done with the country.
The dirty tricks in South Carolina. Mark, it's an honest question. John McCain?
Thanks, Mark. I'll try to be brief. One, people of Arizona don't want me to look back in anger. What happened in South Carolina was over. It's over. And the best way I can be effective for my constituents and in America is not to hold a grudge. That's the easiest thing to do in life, and yet I don't believe that we should do it. Second point is that John Kerry is a friend of mine. I admire and respect him. I worked with him on a number of issues. When he was unfairly and dishonestly attacked for his war record, I came to his defense. Finally, the reason why I could not consider being a vice president, and I didn't, was we don't share the same philosophy. I mean, I am a conservative Republican. I am a conservative Republican. And so for me to then join with a liberal Democrat, which John Kerry is a proud person of that philosophy, it wouldn't have meshed. Finally, could I mention on the Jay Leno show, he asked me about vice president. I said, you know, I spent all those years in a North Vietnamese prison camp, fed scraps, kept in the dark. Why should I do that all over again?
Ooh, we got it. I want to go back to the CIA leak investigation
sure.
for a moment.
Sure.
Robert in Burlington raised this, and his characterization of the Republican Party is now a party of crooks and liars. I mean, there have been difficulties. Tom DeLay, of course, indicted. Scooter Libby indicted. What do you make of this kind of – and, of course, there's the Jack Abramoff situation, mm-hmm. which you've been very closely watching. We know Senator McCain. Mm-hmm. What about the integrity of the GOP now, you know, well into a decade in power in Washington? How's it holding up in your view?
I think we need reform. We need reform of lobbying. We need to enforce campaign finance laws on the books. I think we need to rein in the 527s. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And I would be the last to disagree with the majority of the American people, overwhelming majority of the American people, who disapprove of what we're doing. And so
who's the we there, Senator? Who's the we?
Well, they disagree with Congress overall, both Republican and Democrat. But Republicans are in the majority, so we will get responsibility if we don't clean up our act between now and a year from now.
President Bush
and
said he would do that.
That's what elections are all about. Go ahead.
George Bush said he would do that when he ran against you in 2000. That it wouldn't just mm-hmm. be legal. Things mm-hmm. would be right in the White mm-hmm. House and in Washington. Mm-hmm. Does mm-hmm. he need a house cleaning even beyond what Patrick Fitzgerald might suggest?
I cannot tell the president what to do with his closest advisors. I can say that at some point there's going to have to be an explanation of the events which Patrick Fitzgerald very appropriately did not discuss because he said that he wouldn't discuss people who were not indicted. But I do think there has to be an explanation of events, who called who, under what circumstances, and mm-hmm. I hope that that happens.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. William is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, William. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hey, William.
Hey, Senator. Great talking to you.
Thank you, sir.
Big fan of yours.
Thanks, William. I'm coming to see the Clemson-South Carolina game. I'm looking forward to it.
Right. Oh, great. Well, I'll see you there then. All right.
Okay, pal.
Listen, my question has to do with character in regard to the presidency. And mm-hmm. you've watched, I think, several presidents over the last, let's say, two decades or so.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about those individuals, good and bad, because I think we've had some really downturns, if you will, in terms of the quality of the presidency regarding character. And that, of course, regards truth and faithfulness and fidelity to us and, I think, to families. And I think we've had a real problem there.
William, we'll put that to Senator McCain, but so we don't get too high-blown. Is there a question in there about this president as well? Or
I would say this and the most recent past president.
John McCain? Yeah,
and I think it would – thank you, William. And I think it would be appropriate to mention President Reagan, too, who I happen to have the utmost admiration and respect for. And among other reasons is he was a congenial person, and he wasn't bitterly partisan. He was strong in his beliefs, but he wasn't he never – to my knowledge, he never attacked anyone's motives or character. But the reason why I throw him in there, Iran-Contra was a serious, serious issue. It had to do with violation of the Constitution of the United States. And Ronald Reagan called in Howard Baker – who was a highly respected United States senator, as you know, and a group of other people, and they embarked on a new agenda. And that agenda was the high priorities that the American people had. One of them at that time, of course, was the Cold War. So, and then Bill Clinton had his scandal, too, and he brought in Leon Panetta as his chief of staff, et cetera, et cetera. I do not pretend to tell presidents what to do. That is just beyond my charter. But I do believe that it's well to look at those two presidents if any president is in trouble or has some difficulty. And the other thing you got to do is, as I said, get back on the people's agenda. Most Americans don't believe that Congress shares their priorities. Hmm. And we got to get back, do it, make progress in war in Iraq. Energy is a very important issue. Immigration reform is critical. Mm,
but yeah, speaking to William's question, when it comes to the sitting president, George W. Bush, you're writing about character. You're looking at great examples of it.
Yeah.
How would you assess the character of this president on the evidence?
Look, I happen to like this president. I happen to have gotten to know this president. I happen to think that he's a very decent, hardworking, dedicated American. Is he experiencing difficulties now? Yes, he is. Lincoln experienced difficulties, and I'm not trying to compare him with Lincoln, but presidents throughout history have had difficulties in their presidency. He has three more years to right this ship. And a lot of it is going to depend on whether we, what kind of progress we show or don't show in the conflict in Iraq. And I've already made my views on that very clear. This president is down right now. I'm not going to kick him. I'm going to try to help him, particularly on an issue such as immigration reform, so that we can work. No one should be happy about the difficulties that this administration has today, in my view.
Diego is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Yeah. Hi, Diego. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? Thanks, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a regular fan of your show, and I'm honored to speak with Senator McCain.
Great to have you. What's on your mind, Diego?
I have a question. Actually, it's more of I'm trying to understand the relationship, and it's between your topic that Senator McCain just mentioned, it was immigration reform, and how it ties into the American values, which are defined by give me your tired, poor, and hungry. My question is this, that we've seen this topic come up over and over again. We've seen it since 2001. President Bush mentioned it. Senator McCain and Senator Kennedy actually put it into a bill that was introduced in May of 2005. Mm-hmm. However, we've seen no action since then on this topic. And I'm really confused because, I mean, this is a very important topic for national security. And there's a couple of other issues, benefits that are associated with this topic towards the American economy.
Diego, our time is short, but let us pick that up. John McCain, there's been conservative resistance to the liberalized immigration, the paths toward integration that you'd like to see associated with immigration. Diego says, why can't you move this along? What's happening with that?
Well, we need a great debate and discussion. I'm happy to say that we're going to take it up in the Senate probably in early February for a full-blown debate and discussion. I believe that Senator Kennedy's and my bill is the right recipe. I don't see how you deport 11 million people. I'm talking about those that are here illegally. I agree with Diego. It's a national security issue first, and we do need a guest worker program and a viable one. But have no doubt at the passion and anger many people feel, including in my state, when you have people coming illegally, destroying your property, breaking laws, causing health care costs to be up, et cetera, et cetera. 99% of the people who come across our border are good, honest, decent people who just want a job. But there is an element, drug dealers, coyotes, others that are very bad. And we need to have a legal process beginning with enforcing our border, but also addressing the issue of what the attraction is, which is jobs, so that we have a legitimate guest worker program. I'd like to go back 1 second to Williams. One of the traits that I think has been amongst great presidents is humility. And we write about Eisenhower. Eisenhower wrote two letters the night before the Normandy invasion, one congratulating his troops on their magnificent victory, and the other one a letter of resignation because of the failure of the Normandy invasion in case that happened.
If it should happen.
We need more humility, and we need to have more people take responsibility for things that go wrong, and I think that's a trait in leaders. Ronald Reagan in Iran-Contra, he said, my heart told me that we didn't do anything wrong, but the facts are that my head tells me we did. Mm. He came clean. Mm. You see what I mean?
I do.
That's one of the traits that I think is very important in all presidents.
I guess we're waiting. And with that, Senator McCain, we're out of time as well. It's really great to have you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Tom, I enjoy our spirited conversation. I look forward to doing it again. And if we didn't have a spirited conversation, we wouldn't have so many listeners.
Amen. John McCain.
Thank you, my friend.
The new book is Character is Destiny, inspiring stories every young person should know and every adult should remember. Senator McCain, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks again, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.